Good evening. Good to see you all here. I hope that what I have to say will benefit all of you and is parallel with God's Word. I want to talk for a few minutes tonight about what we're doing right now, and that is worship. So, real quick, I'm going to ask you a few questions. And these I really do want you to think about, because a lot of times when preachers get up here and they say, I'm going to ask you a few questions, you usually just rub it off and, you know, it's something that the preacher says. But I want you to think on these as we go through this sermon and write them down if you need to. But at the end of this, I want you to be able to answer this. So first of all, why are you here? Why are you here right now? Why are you worshiping? Why did you worship this morning? And what does worship mean to you? And so we're going to talk for a few minutes about worship to God. So first we need to talk about what is worship. Because, I don't know about you, but I need to know what something is before I do it. So let's talk about that. First of all, let's talk about the definition. The Lexington describes it as to bow down. The Webster's Dictionary describes it as to honor, show reverence. And overall, it is to fall down before. Now let's talk about some Bible context. What I mean here is proof that it is in the Bible and that what I'm talking about is in the Bible and worship is in the Bible. First of all, go to Matthew chapter 20, verse 20. We'll begin there. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came to Jesus with her sons, bowing down and making a request of him. Next, go to Matthew chapter 18, verse 26. So the slave fell to the ground and prostrated himself before him, saying, have patience with me, and I will repay you everything. Now this passage isn't talking about Jesus. What it is talking about is a story where the slave did wrong against his master, and now he's coming back to him and asking him for forgiveness. And it says, so the slave fell to the ground. And when you fall to the ground or bow down, that is a sign of respect. And as we will talk in a few minutes about, respect is a sign of worship. So now that we talked about some the Bible context of worship, let's go to some Bible examples. So first of all, go to Genesis chapter 22, verse 12. This is when Abraham was going to offer Isaac. He said, do not stretch out your hand against the lad, and do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Then Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the place of his son. Abraham called the name of that place, the Lord will provide. As it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it will be provided. Now here we don't see a direct sign of what we just talked about. We don't see to bow down, fall down before, to honor. But we do see that Moses offered the ram up. And as we see all throughout the Bible, a burnt offering is a sign of worship. Next, go to Exodus chapter 34, verse 8. Moses made haste to bow low toward the earth and worship. Now, this passage specifically mentions bowing low and worshiping. So there's not really much to go into there because it says that Moses made haste to bow low to the earth and worship. So now that we talked about what worship is, the definition, now we need to talk about who we worship. Because, once again, we talked about what to worship, what is worship, but we don't know who to worship. Because throughout this whole sermon, every point can't be without the other. So just keep that in mind as we go through. So first and last answer is God. There's no other answers to this. It's just God. So let's look at a few passages that tell us that God is the only one we worship. So first, go to Revelation chapter 22, and we will begin in verse 9. But he said to me, do not do that. I am a fellow servant of yours and of your brethren, the prophets, and of those who heed the words of this book, worship God. So here, and as we see in a lot of these passages that we're going to look at, it is a direct statement that worship God. There's nothing else to it. So stay in Revelation and go to chapter 7 in verse 11. Now this is a very, just put the imagination into your head, this is a very powerful scene. So Revelation chapter 7 verse 11. And all the angels were standing around the throne and around the elders and the four living creatures, and they fell on their faces before the throne and worshiped God. So once again, this is a blunt passage. So if you know me, you know that I love blunt passages. Just because if somebody comes up to you, asks you a question, you can just look for a blunt passage, say, here you go. You can go into detail, but blunt passages just tell it what it is, tell it as it is. And here it is saying, basically, the angels and everyone is going to bow to God. And we recently studied Revelation, and the four living creatures, we know that the four living creatures symbolize, at that time, the big nations of the earth. So this is telling us that no matter who you are, no matter how big you are, no matter how much money you have, everyone at the end of time will bow down to God. Now let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 31. So Samuel went back following Saul, and Saul worshiped the Lord. Now this isn't directly telling us to worship God, but it is an example. An example of Saul worshiping God. And just like Saul, we need to worship God like just how we're doing now. And finally, go to John chapter 4, verse 21. Now, throughout all these verses, this is personally my favorite, just because of when we get to verse 23. John chapter 4, verse 21. Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, an hour is coming when neither in this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know, we worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But an hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For such people the Father seeks to be his worshipers. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth." So, at the beginning of this, I call your attention to verse 23. "But an hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father." This instantly shows us that the people that worship all these different gods, Buddha, Baal, all these different gods, those aren't true worshipers, because only the true worshipers worship God. So we can easily see there that if you're worshiping another god, you're not a true worshiper. So now that we know that God is the only one to be worshipped, let's take a minute, apart from the main point, and look at who is God. Because once again, if I'm new to, and I'm just now reading the Bible, I want to know, you tell me to worship God, but who is God? What do I know about God? So let's look at that. So first, go to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, and we need to see that God is the creator of everything. Now, this is a passage we all know. So Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." Now, once again, that is a blunt passage. We could go more into detail about the whole book of Genesis, but just hearing that, God created everything. Also, go to Revelation chapter 14, verse 7. "And he said with a loud voice, 'Fear God and give him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come. Worship him who made the heaven and the earth and sea and springs of waters.'" So this is telling us to worship God, the one who made everything. So What more do you need? You can read this passage, and you're being told, worship God, the Creator. Another thing God is he rules in the kingdom of men. He's the great I Am, excuse me. So go to John chapter 8, verse 58. Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was born, I am." Now, you might be wondering, well, this says Jesus said this. You're not God, but you're saying God is the great I am. We could go into very much more detail, and it could be an entire another sermon about Jesus and God, the Godhead, all of that. But simply put it, in a simple sense, in Genesis chapter 1, verse 29, it says that, "Let us make man in our image." So we can easily see that Jesus was there when God was making, when God was creating. And God is the great I am. We see that many times in the Bible. Another thing is he rules in the kingdom of men. Like I said in Revelation chapter 7, verse 11, everybody is going to bow down, no matter how big you are. But let's look at Daniel chapter 4, verse 32. "And you will be driven away from mankind, and your dwelling place will be with the beasts of the field. You will be given grass to eat like cattle, and 7 periods of time will pass over you until you recognize that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows it on whomever he wishes. So this is something we see, once again, all in the Bible. It's what we discussed in Revelation chapter 7, is that no matter how big you are, no matter how big you think you are, everyone is going to bow down to God. And if you're like, well, what if this country invades me, or what if all this stuff happens? You can always trust in God that God is always going to be in control. He will do whatever he wishes with whomever he wishes, because God rules in the kingdom of men. And finally, no one else. Like I said, with God, it's the first and last answer. But then you have no one else. And there's a very clear passage in the Bible that sums that up. So go to Matthew chapter 4, verse 10. For some context, this is when Jesus was tempted, and after all the temptations. "Then Jesus said to him, 'Go, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only.'" Now, I don't know about you, but if Jesus is telling me to worship God and God only, I'm going to worship God and God only, because Jesus tells me that's all I need. So that should sum it up for you, and we need to worship God and God only and no one else. So now that we know who God is, we need to look at why we should worship him. Because once again, like I said, talking about who is God, now that I know who he is, I need to know why should I worship him. What is very important about him that I should worship him? So let's look at that. First of all, we are commanded to worship. So go to Matthew chapter 4, verse 10. And we just looked at this, but let's just read it again because it's such a powerful passage. "Then Jesus said to him, 'Go, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only.'" Once again, if Jesus is telling me to, then I need to. And also, God tells us to. Go to Exodus chapter 20, verse 5. "You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and the fourth generations of those who hate me." Particularly, I would like to call your attention to the beginning of verse 5. It says, "You shall not worship them or serve them." That means that you worship nobody else. You worship me. So once again, if Jesus and God are telling us, that's kind of like, if it's just Jesus, that's powerful and I need to worship God. But if Jesus and God are telling us, that's even more powerful. Also, I'm edified. Go to 1 Corinthians 14. "What is the outcome then, brethren? When you assemble, each one has a psalm, has a teaching, has a revelation, has a tongue, has an interpretation. Let all things be done in edification." It uses the word edification, and because I'm edified. So what that's saying is, Anything we do, whether it's singing, praying, the Lord's Supper, anything we do, worshiping God, we need to do it, and it should be done in edification, for edification. So that when you come to worship on Sunday, you're excited because I'm going to learn more. I'm going to get to spend time with brothers in Christ, brothers and sisters in Christ, and learn more about God. And also, we should want to. Go to Psalms chapter 122, verse 1. I was glad when they said to me, "Let us go to the house of the Lord." Now, it's basically like I was saying. When you're getting up on Sunday morning, you don't need to be, "Oh, I got to go to church this morning." Or, "Oh, I got to go to church tonight." Or it's Wednesday and you're like, "Oh no, I got to go to church. That's horrible." But no, you need to be ready, excited, filled with excitement to go to church. You need to be like, "I get to go to church today." Not, "I have to go to church," but "I get to go to church today." Because we should always want to worship God. So now that I know why I should, I need to know when to worship. Because if I know what is worship, who to worship, why should we worship, but I worship, but I take the Lord's Supper and worship and do like a Sunday-style worship on Monday or Tuesday, that's not going to work. So let's look at that. First, it's any time. You're not there. You worship any time. So go to Matthew chapter 26, and this is the example of Jesus worshiping in a very hard time. Matthew chapter 26, verse 36 through 46. Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and distressed. Then he said to them, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me." And he went a little beyond them and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will." And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, So you men could not keep watch with me for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away again a second time and prayed, saying, "My Father, if this cannot pass away unless I drink it, your will be done." Again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them again and went away and prayed a third time, saying the same thing once more. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, Are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand. So we should know the Garden of Gethsemane, the story, very well. And in this time, the entire time Jesus knew, "I'm going to be betrayed tonight." But yet, he still found the time to pray. And as we're going to see in a few minutes, that praying is a sign of worship. Whenever you're praying, it's worship to God. But Jesus, in one of the hardest times in his life, he still found the time to pray to God, to worship God. Next, we're going to look at the example of Paul and Silas. So go over to Acts chapter 16 and in verse 25. For context, this is when Paul and Silas were imprisoned and they were going to put on trial the next day. Acts chapter 16, verse 25. But about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns of praise to God, and the prisoners were listening to them. So once again, a very hard time in Paul and Silas' life. They were imprisoned, but yet they still found the time to pray and sing to God. And once again, those are signs of worship. And we need to, no matter what time it is, no matter how things are going, we always need to find the time to worship God in any way that we can. Also, we need to worship on the first day of the week. So go over to Acts chapter 20 and verse 7. And this is talking about the Lord's Supper. On the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul began talking to them, intending to leave the next day, and he prolonged his message until midnight. Now, there are many passages in the New Testament, whether in Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, that talk about the Lord's Supper being only set to Sundays, the first day of the week. And so, why other signs of worship are, you can do those anytime, these are specifically set to the first day of the week. Also in 1 Corinthians, chapter 16, verse 1, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also. On the first day of every week, each one of you is to put aside and save, as he may prosper, so that no collections be made when I come." So once again, just like the Lord's Supper, giving is specifically set to the first day of the week. That's why we come on the first day of the week, because we are commanded to worship on the first day of the week. Because the Lord's Supper, giving anything, once again, anything you do to God in the right manner, that is worship. So now that I know, excuse me, but there are some things that people say worship is too hard. Getting up on Sunday, oh, I got better things to do on Sunday, or Wednesdays, oh man, I was going to go to this place with my friends, you know, worship's, you know, it's not that important, but you know, this is other things important. So here is a list of things that you might do other than worship. You might go to the movies. You might go to school, which we would because school is important. You go to work. You get money at work. You go to the game. You go shopping, or you just don't go because that's too much work, apparently. But I'd like to point your attention. People say, I go to school because, you know, I learn stuff. Or I go to work, you know, I get the extra money. Well, let me tell you this, that when you go to church, you get the riches of heaven, and you also get the knowledge to know how to get there. Far better than any riches of earth. But now that I know when to worship, I need to know how to worship. Because once again, none of these points can be without the other. So if I'm doing all of this, but I don't know how to worship, it does me no good. So first, you must worship with humility, by humbling yourself. So go to Acts chapter 20 and in verse 19. Acts chapter 20, verse 19. "Serving the Lord with all humility and with tears and with trials which come upon me through the plots of the Jews." So it says here that we need to worship with humility. And basically what that means is when I come to church, I don't need to think, well, I'm dressed nicer than that guy. Or, you know, I'm doing better than he is. Or in a way, I don't know how you could think this, or I'm better than God, you know? I've done a lot more with my life. What has God done? He's just sat up in heaven. But no, God is far more superior than you. God is far more important. And everyone, when you come to worship, you're all the same in God's eyes. No one is different. Also, I must worship with reverence, to honor, have a deep respect. Go to Psalms chapter 5, verse 7. "But as for me, by your abundant loving kindness, I will enter your house. At your holy temple, I will bow in reverence for you." We need to respect God. We need to honor God. We need to do as he says. We need to come to church with a respectful manner, respecting God and what he has and what he said for us to do. We also need to come to worship with joy. We need to be happy to come to worship. Go to Psalm, stay in Psalm and go to chapter 95, verse 1 through 2. "Oh, come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout joyfully to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before his presence with thanksgiving. Let us shout joyfully to him with psalms." Once again, I don't know about you, but I love singing. Whenever we come here or whenever I go to another congregation and visit, singing, I always love it because just to hear all the voices blend, I'm I'm happy to sing. It makes me joyful. But not just in singing is where you need to be happy. You need to be happy that you're here. You need to be happy whenever you're doing anything. Once again, praying, singing, the Lord's Supper, anything. You need to be happy that you're here. And to go along with that, you also need to be thankful that you're here. Go to stay in Psalms once again and go to chapter 100 and in verse 4. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him. Bless his name. When it says enter his gates with thanksgiving, we can think of that as when we walk in those doors on Sunday morning, Sunday night, or whenever you meet during the week. That when we come in here, we need to be thankful that I get to worship. Because some countries, you can't worship. You're persecuted. You're killed. You're thrown in prison if you worship. We have the freedom to come here. And God gives us an opportunity to come here and to save our souls. And also, we need to worship with dignity. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 40. But all things must be done properly and in an orderly manner. So what this is meaning is properly or serious. I don't need to come to church and goof off, you know. It's just church. I can laugh and do whatever I want. But no, when you come to church, during the worship service, you need to be serious. Because worship is not a laughing matter. Worship is serious. Because if you don't worship, you're going to go to hell. And that's pretty serious to me. So, out of all these things, you need to have humility, reverence, joy, thankfulness, and dignity. Because if you do these things, you will be one step closer to going to heaven. So now that we know that, we need to talk about who to worship. Because once again, all of these points can't go without the other. So if you're doing everything else, and you're like, well, I'm fine, I'm doing everything else, but I'm worshiping with some Baptists over here, or I'm worshiping with a Catholic, it doesn't matter who I worship with. As long as I'm worshiping God, you know, it's all okay. So let's talk about who to worship with. And some worship is not acceptable. Go to Matthew chapter 6, verse 5. And once again, this is about the Jews. And there are many passages talking about the Jews and talking about how they thought their worship was acceptable, but yet they put Jesus to death. They put Jesus on the cross. So let's read in Matthew chapter 6, verse 5, one of the many verses that talks about how the Jews thought it was correct, but it actually wasn't. When you pray, you are not to be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners so that they may be seen by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. Now, what this is saying is that the Jews were going out, the Pharisees, they were all going out and praying because it looked good. You know, look at me, I'm praying. And like what we just talked about, being humble. They were going out being like, well, I'm praying. I'm better than all of you who are not praying. But when you pray, it's not to look good. Because if you're doing that just to look good, then stop praying. Because prayer is talking to God. Prayer is acknowledging God's might and power. Prayer is asking God for things, thanking him for things. It's not to look good. Because prayer is one of the most important things because it's how we communicate with God. And about the Ethiopian eunuch, go to Acts chapter 8, verse 27. So he got up and went, and there was an Ethiopian eunuch, a court official of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, who was in charge of all her treasure, and he had come to Jerusalem to worship. Now, we all know about the Ethiopian eunuch, and at this time, it was before he had been baptized. So when it says he went to Jerusalem to worship, we can immediately say that that was not the right worship because he was not yet a Christian at that time and he probably wasn't even worshiping correctly. Also, God only accepts the worship of the obedient. Go to John chapter 9, verse 31. We know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is God-fearing and does his will, he hears him. Now, a sinner is the term that uses when you don't follow God. So not worshiping God is sinning. So when God only accepts worship of the obedient, if you're sinning and you're sinning, then God will not hear you. And so that's what it's saying here, that you can be worshiping all you want, but if you're out here drinking, smoking, doing awful things, it's not going to work. Once again, then just stop, because if you can't see that what you're doing is wrong, then there's not even a point in continuing it. And also, us as Christians, we need to worship with the right people. Go to Matthew chapter 15 and verse 13. But he answered and said, "Every plant which my heavenly Father did not plant shall be uprooted." This goes back to the entire Bible. Because the entire Bible is surrounded by one religion. Not multiple, not 10, 20, it's one. Because if I'm over here, I want to start my own religion. And that's going to be okay because I'm doing what God says, so that's okay. No, there is one religion. And like it says, at the end of time, no matter if you think you're doing right, at the end of time, if you're not worshiping with the one church that God has set, it will be uprooted. And it doesn't matter what you've done. If you're worshiping with the wrong people, it will be uprooted. So now, lastly, and this is probably one of the most important points in this sermon, because you can do all of this stuff, all of the 6 points we've already listed, you could do all of it, but if you're over here doing it but not having the right mindset, once again, leave. Because it doesn't matter if you're doing all this stuff, if you don't have the right mindset, you're not doing it the way God wants you to. So let's look at that, and the lesson will be yours. First of all, we need to look at what shall our mindset be during the Lord's Supper. So go to 1 Corinthians, chapter 11, and in verse 26, starting in verse 26. "For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Therefore, whoever eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner shall be guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. But a man must examine himself, and in so doing, he is to eat of the bread and drink of the cup." So what this is saying, and what a lot of verses say in the Bible, when we're partaking of the Lord's Supper, we're not to be thinking on the outside things, thinking what I'm going to do when I get home, thinking, oh, what is that guy doing? Or why is that baby crying? I need to be thinking, Jesus died for me. And without him, I'm basically a lost cause. Because he's the only way I'm going to get to heaven. And without him, there's no chance. So I need to be thinking on Jesus and his death and what he did for me. We also, during the entire worship, not set to just one part of worship, we need to love the Lord. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 5. "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might." Now this verse is, I remember reading this as a little child. I've known this verse forever. Because it's saying you need to love the Lord with every part of you. Because if I'm showing that I love the Lord, but I don't actually love the Lord, you don't love the Lord. You need to love the Lord with every part of you. And even while doing worship, you need to love the Lord. Also, we need to be in the same mind. So basically what I'm saying is we need to not all be thinking, well, it's the exact same words, the exact same thought at all times, but we need to be thinking the same thing. So go to Romans chapter 12, verse 16. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. We talked about this a minute ago. With humility and humbling yourselves. We don't need to think, I'm better than him. Because when we come to worship, once again, we are all the same in God's eyes. So it's, what it's saying is be of the same mind toward one another. Don't think, well, that guy, I don't think he's singing along with everybody. Or oh, he was looking around during the entire worship service. No, we're all the same. We all do wrong things. And no matter how you think you are, we all need to be thinking, I'm the same person as that guy. I'm the same person as that girl. I'm the same person as everyone here, because that's how God sees me. And finally, probably one of the most important things in the entire sermon, we need to focus on God. Because going back and looking back at everything we've studied, we can know what worship is. We can know who to worship. We can know when to worship, how to worship. And we can even know a mind for worship. But if you don't focus on God, none of that matters. And go home. Because if you're over here thinking, man, that roast was good last night. Or, we need to get out of here, you know, I'm going to have ham for lunch. If we're thinking that, we're thinking something totally different. We're not focusing on God. And for the last passage, turn to Rome, stay in Romans and go to chapter 8 and verse 7. Because the mind set on the flesh is hostile toward God, for it does not subject itself to the law of God, for it is not even able to do so. So what this is saying is when we come to worship, it's our chance to do as God has commanded of us. We don't need to be thinking about what's happening on earth or earthly things. What we need to be thinking about is God. And that's the only thing we need to be thinking about. In when we pray, when we sing, even during the sermon and in during the Lord's Supper, we need to always be focusing on God and focusing on what he has done for us and what he has gifted us with. So after all these things that I've said, what do you think now? Look back at those questions. If any of you wrote them down, I want you to go home tonight, I ask of you, and look over those real fast. And after all that I've said, I want you to think, what is, and why am I worshiping? Why do I come here? Do I come here just because, well, my parents, they always took me as a kid, or because, you know, it's just the usual thing or the normal thing, you know, or everybody expects me to? Because if you're thinking that, that is, just go home. What I'm saying is put your mind on God. Because you can even say put your mind on God 24/7. Because we go out into the world and there are so many things that could tempt us, distract us, even while walking down the street. So you need to always have your mind that I'm a Christian. Or even if you're not a Christian and you haven't obeyed the gospel yet, you're still, I'm looking forward to becoming a Christian one day, and I'm going to strive and try and study because I want to become a Christian. You always need to be focusing on God because God gave us everything. And worship is an essential part of life. And if we do not worship God, then what's the point of even doing anything? Because at the end of time, it's all going to be the same thing, because if we do not worship God, if we worship someone else or something else, or we don't even go to worship because we don't think it's essential, then you know your place at the end of time, and you can just, and you're already walking that road, and you can just continue down it. If there are any here who have had sin in their life, have already obeyed the gospel, but still have sin in their life, if there are any of those here that have not even obeyed the gospel yet, please come as we stand and as we sing.